end. Hello? From the Catskill Mountains of New York State, I'm Eric Francis, your astrologer. For the next hour or so, welcome to your audio reading for 2026 that accompanies the inner light reading for 2026. I'm recording on Saturday the 24th at 2:35 p.m. It is very nice and sunny out. It looks like it really would be quite warm out there, except for the fact that it's only about 8 degrees. And according to every newspaper and local farmers, big snowpocalypse is on its way. So I will have your reading up on the internet before the soon-to-be infamous big snowstorm of January 2026 happens. There's an Allen Ginsberg poem. I forget the title. It's either an Eastern ballad or a Western ballad. It's one of his older poems, and it goes a little bit like this. I speak of love that comes to mind. The moon is faithful, although blind. She moves in thought, she cannot speak. Perfect care has made her bleak. I never dreamed the sea so deep, the earth so dark, so long my sleep. I have become another child. I wake to see the world go wild. And that is my interpretation of the Libra solar chart. We could be very cryptic and say that, there you go, that's your reading. But no, that wouldn't be any fun. We're not here just for Allen Ginsberg. We're here for some astrology. So yeah, you're waking to see the world go wild. The way that the astrology is situated right now, between the way you're situated and the way the astrology is situated, the big action for this year is largely taking place in Aries. The twin conjunctions, Neptune and Saturn, and then Chiron and Eris going on. And then let's make sure we don't forget Salacia in your seventh. And Aries, where this is happening, is in your seventh place. Seventh house. House of relationships. The house of partnerships, the house of the everyday walk-around environment and the people that you encounter there, but primarily considered by most astrologers to be just the house of partnership. But I take a bigger view of the seventh. My view of the seventh, looking right across the dial, with Aries in the first, and Libra in the first, Aries in the seventh, is that if you hold your eyes level, like you look kind of, you just kind of balance your head on your spine and you look straight in front of you and you turn your head from side to side, and you can go maybe about 150, 160 degrees, that's the seventh house. Whatever happens in there happens in the seventh house. And of course, it represents certain special circumstances, people, and all this stuff. But that's the viewpoint on the seventh house. You're looking right at it all the time. Huh, that's real interesting. It's real interesting, especially because there are these two outrageously rare, very unusual, high potency, unmissable conjunctions happening. You might say, well, what's it mean? And it's like, well, take a look at the world going wild. So it's Saturday afternoon, we're sitting here and I'm watching the Planet Waves news discussion list fly by with people concerned about another tragedy in Minneapolis that happened today. On another little email channel, Cindy and I are fleshing out the details of the situation. This is a big deal. This is going to get bigger. The world is going wild. The world is going to go wild. These conjunctions are not even at full strength yet. And the thing is that you're kind of surveying the scene. Now, by the way, Planet Waves is Libra rising. I chose Libra as the rising sign of Planet Waves. So when I think of Libra, I also think of the chart of my company's mission, and this is quite accurate. It is all unmissable, and you are in this kind of unusual relationship to all that is going on in the world, as if it is more personally relevant to you than it is to nearly anyone you know, even if you're not necessarily personally involved. You are kind of an eyewitness to history. You know what's going on in the world right now is important. And don't let anybody talk you out of that. Don't let anybody, you know, tell you that you got to leave it to the experts. Fuck the experts. You are a fair witness, and you are seeing this, and it sure is making you wonder. And we ain't seen nothing yet with these conjunctions. It's only January. And it's, especially in Minnesota, it's like, you know, negative 80 degrees, and you know, you exhale and it snows, and the little bits of ice hit the ground. Well, this is very unusual for resistance to, say, for example, a friendly neighborhood government program that just happens to be killing people. January is a very unusual time for there to be this kind of resistance, and this is just the beginning. And so whatever you got going on, whatever you're doing, there is a lot of activity in your world. And I speak of the transpersonal and the collective. It's definitely a factor. All these, this Chiron, Eris, and this Saturn, Neptune, they have their transpersonal elements. They do take you way beyond your personal sphere. And in your personal sphere, there's also a lot of activity. And yet it may seem that you are in the eye of the storm, you know, that you're in the center of the cyclone. It's not necessarily having a negative impact on you. And I think that is, if you can manage to not be drawn into it too deeply and keep the witness alert. The witness is a part of consciousness. The Buddhists map this out, I think, and other, you know, it is the self that observes the self, and the self that observes the world. It's the observer self. And I think it's a strong factor in Libra. Libra has a way of being relational in this way that is, you might say, clear. And by the way, one of the reasons why Libra is relational is because Aries falls in the seventh place of Libra. It's the opposite sign. And the relational nature of Libra comes from Libra itself, but it also comes from the location of Aries in the house of relationships. And the implication is that you strive to actualize through your encounters with others. And now you're striving to actualize or being given no chance whatsoever in your relationship to a wider world than your personal relationships. And it is this very wild time in history that there's really no telling which way things are going to go, how things are going to work out. But I suspect that you are centered. One of the reasons why you're centered is, despite, you know, looking straight at all of this, you have very well supported that there is enough balance, there is enough diversity of viewpoint, there's enough activity in other houses to maintain a kind of a holistic sense of what's going on, that and you can draw resources from other places. You can draw creative resources. You can draw spiritual resources. You can draw, let's see, what else have we got here? You can draw on your family background. You have a strong reputation. So there can be all this chaos and mishigas manifesting in your seventh house, and you're looking out at a world going wild, and it does not need to even distract you much. You can just kind of proceed. And no doubt, you have some, let's say, productive involvement with everything that's happening in the world right now. And that's very important, because productive involvement is the opposite of being silenced, paralyzed, alienated, frustrated, afraid. And the way that looks is that we have no choice but to establish a conscious relationship with what is in the seventh place. It's the place of relationships, and it's the place where we essentially establish an initial relationship to everyone. Where it goes is another matter. Now, as for the fifth, and as I'm recording this, I mean, this is not a horary reading, but there's no ignoring the massive concentration of planets in Aquarius as I speak. The sun is there. The sun has completed a conjunction to Pluto. Mars is coming along to make a conjunction to Pluto. Then there's Vesta. Then there's Mercury. Then there's Venus. Then there's Pallas Athene, all in Aquarius today. And for you, and some of this is going to stick around, namely Pluto and Vesta are going to be the last remaining points there, but especially Pluto is activating the whole Aquarius region of your chart, the Aquarius region for you being about where you explore a form of daring, creativity, and also the fifth is relational. The fifth is the kind of sex that is voluntarily relational. It's the kind of thing that we do for fun, whereas in the eighth, which we're going to get into in a second, maybe in a couple of minutes, the eighth is more about commitments and agreements and contracts and expectations, whereas the fifth is a place to play, a place to explore, a place where it's okay to have fun. You don't really think of the eighth house as being much fun, though some people do like it. The fifth is the big art studio, casino, and kind of bungee jumping adventure, all in the same place. But the sign involved is Aquarius, and so that suggests a more intellectual approach to creativity, a more structured and disciplined approach, and also a social approach. Things that are done with collaborators. But in any event, and this will change because, you know, Aquarius brings in the social element, but Pluto brings in both an individual element and a relationship to the collective element. But what's going on is, in addition to this kind of waking to see the world go wild in Aries with these twin conjunctions happening like right in front of your nose, well, there is at the moment this massive activation going on of Pluto in your fifth place. Pluto's going to be there till 2043 to 2044. Pluto's going to be around a long time. We're talking like 18 more years. It's not going anywhere fast. And so there is this journey of reawakening to the part of you that has this impulse to create, whatever it is, and the impulse to do something interesting and a little bit risky. Now, the challenge having Aquarius on the fifth is that it can get a little bit calcified. It can find its way into situations that are made of a lot of fixed patterns. And that an interesting thing about having patterns in the most, you know, fixed, the tendency to fixed patterns in the most creative angle of your chart is that it can give you a lot of discipline to doing, practicing, developing your skills or whatever it might be. And at the same time, it's very easy to get stuck in those patterns. And that is very unlikely to happen because Pluto is going to bring a lot of mojo into shifting your patterns, in reorganizing your patterns, and making sure that you're going to have to put a lot of energy into recognizing what they are and the kinds of changes that are happening. And Pluto is going to ensure that you express yourself by changes that are happening. I mean, the changes within you, where a lot of things you may have taken for granted about, you know, the way that you work, the way that you do anything creative, the way that you think about what you want to do for fun that you have never done before, are all going to get shaken up to the point where you're going to be compelled to pay attention to what's going on, because that's just what Pluto does. And Pluto in Aquarius is not the same story for everyone. And for some people, it's going to be extremely difficult, and especially people who are not endowed with the strength of will and independence to be able to stand up to peer pressure and to consensus reality. But what's going on with you is that you, in the fifth house, it's as good as it gets, and it is going to highlight your ability to distinguish yourself from other people and to not feel as if you have to get stuck in consensus reality in any ways. It's not going to be possible to do it. And especially now, this is a, like, these moments, this little piece of the year, January and February, when we've got all these planets packed into your fifth place, including this conjunction of Mars and Pluto that's coming, this is a real break-free, breakout time. This is really an opportunity to set yourself free and to have much more fun. By creativity, I'm not suggesting that this got anything to do with, Rampart, what was his name? Not Rampart. Rembrandt. That guy. The very chiaroscuro guy. Or Da Vinci, right? I mean, your ability to express yourself in a way that is interesting to you and that is fun and that allows you to take some creative risk. It's not about basket weaving. This is, for you, creative fulfillment comes from having challenged yourself in some way, having challenged the viewpoint in some way, having asserted yourself in some way. There's the risk factor is great fun for you, and the risk factor is going to come from thinking differently and from kind of going counterculture in a way, going against the prevailing trend that our society in, which is, by the way, kind of a techno obsession that is associated with Aquarius in some facets. But I think that between that and what's going on in the seventh house, Aries, which also is under a very, very strong influence of the technological environment, the question is, A, what can you do with that environment that is not being done before? How can you bring real passion and real creativity into this digitized world that people either don't notice, or they really think they love it because it seems so convenient and everything's going to be great, or it's like, where is this all going? But the only way out is through, and so there's no running from it. There's no there's no like dodging the technological environment and its impact on us. There is only basically dancing with it and seeing whatever inevitable involvement that you have does to help you grow and change and to be right here with what is going on in the world. This is definitely not a time to be caught in the past in any way. I mean, you've done plenty of that with the trip of Pluto through Capricorn, your fourth house from 2008 to 2024. And all of a sudden, now is the moment to catch up and to have your relationships be real in the moment, and to be able to hold your sense of who you are, even in the face of overwhelming pressure that seems to be coming somehow from others, but somehow also generally just kind of rising up like heat waves out of the environment, to hold your awareness of who you are to the point where no one can pull any fast ones and try to change you in a way that you fall for, or convince you that you are someone that you are not, or convince you that you're not someone who you are. And this does not take a lot of fight. It just takes a little awareness and the desire for understanding, and also having a sense that your trajectory through life is distinctly your own, and that most people don't have too much of a right to an opinion about your trajectory through life, but you certainly do, and you seem very well situated to really get the message that your life is yours to live, your decisions are yours to make, your relationships are yours to explore as best you can. All right, back in a minute. So it's kind of funny that in classic Libra fashion, I read to the houses in your zone of projection, house 5 and house 7, that things that are going on a bit extrinsically to your interior world. Fifth is really about expressing your interior world, and the seventh is about dancing with your exterior world. So they both have kind of externalization quality to them. But let's go to the other side of the chart and look on the introspective side of the chart and look at what's going on in Libra, and then also consider the signs and therefore houses adjacent to Libra, which is Virgo to one side and Scorpio to the other side. Those three put together, the reference house, which is house 1, Libra, Sun, Rising, whatever, and then 12, Virgo right before that, and then Scorpio right after that. There's this thing in Libra that has been there, you know, for a long time. It's probably, it's a fixed star, so it only moves because the Earth wobbles. And so it's basically been where it's been for a century. So we were all born with this thing in either the first or the second degree of Libra. It's called M87. It is a galaxy. It is a very, 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 very big galaxy, and it's constantly sitting at the very door to Libra. It's a thing that you kind of have with you all the time, and it's not commonly written about, and it's one of those points that's not used very much, and there's only a handful of astrologers who are doing work with these galaxies and points like that. I happen to put this one into every chart, and it is part of what I think accounts for my human blowtorch theory of Libra. Are you familiar with my human blowtorch theory of Libra? Did I write about it in Inner Light? You read all these things about Libra being indecisive and all this bullshit and all that. I mean, yeah, maybe. But what my take on Libra is that actually the main property of Libra, besides Venus being the ruling planet and there being an aesthetic sense in Libra that you kind of only find in the Venus-ruled signs. And someone who's not that associated with a Venus-ruled sign, they're going to have something, if they have a very, very good aesthetic sense, and Libra's pretty much the best, with Taurus and Pisces coming in a very, very close second. Besides that aesthetic sense, that sense of balance, it's almost an Italian sense of beauty, a distinctly Italian and maybe a little bit Greek, but it's more passionate than the Greeks, is that you have this factor in your chart, which is at the very, very beginning of your chart. It's a galaxy kind of guarding the gate called M87, Messier 87, which is four times the size of the Milky Way. Okay, so just to get the sense of scale here, in astrology, a single fixed star can mean quite a bit. A single planet can mean quite a bit. A single, little ice cube or asteroid can mean quite a bit. M87 is more than a trillion stars. Now, no one counted. Don't try. But you'll count to one because you can only see the whole thing in one blob of it with a jet pouring out of it. This thing can work like an emitter or an attractor. It can work, or better to say that it can work like an emitter, or it can work like a kind of a vacuum. And it's a fine turn between emitter and vacuum. And I suggest that you be conscious of this and that you stay in emitter mode. When you get into vacuum mode, when you get it into the sense that there is this like big black hole, it's difficult to get out of because there's a heck of a lot of gravity. But when you get into creator emitter mode and you tap into that ongoing sense of this, how do you describe it? Quick, ChatGPT, give me a word to describe a trillion stars all in the same place. I'm actually not in ChatGPT. I'm just watching the recording form. I don't know if I can convey the feeling of this, but that it might draw a huge amount of energy in and never really be full, or emit a huge amount of energy and never really be empty, is much closer than it seems. The difference between them is much closer than it seems. And so if you work with that and you notice what you're doing, either emitting creativity, something beautiful. I didn't finish the blowtorch part. You will have a strong advantage. Now, here's the blowtorch part. Libras can seem very quiet, and they can blend in with the scenery and not be they know how to stay out of the way and are usually pretty content working in a role that as long as you know that it's meaningful, that you can do one of those dharmic roles where, you know, you're just tying up all the loose ends, as my old editor Dave Nick said at Caner. He said, he introduced himself as I'm a tie up loose ends Libra. Well, yeah, that sure was true. Got to work with 10 translators and, you know, 15 newspapers in the English language, and then the websites, and then there's the other writers, and then there's a lot of he tied a lot of loose ends up. Oh, good old Dave Nick, that was what he done. And then you can go, and you're a blowtorch. So you turn the flame all the way down, and it's still lit, but you don't really see it. And then you turn it up, and then it's like, wow, it can cut through steel. You can stay in the background, or you can cut through steel. That's the human blowtorch. And I think part of that property is coming from M87. And the Aries point has its second most powerful point in Libra, and M87 is right there. I suspect that the presence of M87 in Libra, in your sign, is one of the things that is adding all this emphasis and power to the Aries point in our era, say, for example, the past century. So that's there. It's always going to be there. And you should know that it's there. And look it up, type in M87 galaxy and get a picture of it and see what this thing is. It's got this huge jet, that's probably, you know, millions of light years long, but it's just, it'd be cool to go there and see what that's about. But you kind of walk around and you contain it. Now, also, there's several other very important points, and I go over them in the inventory, but one of them is logos. And one of the reasons why you can look out at all of this sheer, utter, complete raving madness going on in the world and not necessarily be that phased, though I'm sure you know, you're sensitive to balance and when things are not in balance and you're like, this could go out of balance, but that is an observation that you're making, and that's and I think that would be coming from logos. So there's a slow, I'm only talking slow movers for the most part in this reading. Logos is about the ability to translate things into thought, and from thoughts into words, observations, thoughts into words. It's about very strong connection with what you think, that what you think is not something separate from you. It's not something extrinsic to who you are. What you think is very much a part of who you are. And you have the capacity to make sense of what's going on. Now, this may be somewhat fictional, but I don't think so. I think that you just have that sense-making very strong. Okay, another factor that you have is this, and it's in a conjunction with logos, and this is a weird point. And by the way, if you're you're hearing this, you have access to the 2025 The Awakening reading. I don't know if you've gone back and reread that, but I strongly suggest you go through this. It's been a while since I wrote it. It's been about 14, 15 months since I wrote it. But I think that my 2025 Libra reading, The Awakening reading for Libra, was one of the best readings I ever did. And that reading was making me nervous about writing Inner Light, because I thought, how am I going to top this Libra reading? And the breakthrough in the Libra reading was cracking logos, which I used Philip K. Dick essay, which I believe I linked to, and also cracking this dwarf planet, Maki Maki, named for a kind of a religious, a god on Easter Island. But the thing about Maki Maki is he's the new arrival god. When you think of Easter Island, you think of the Moai, you think of those incredible statues that seem so hauntingly familiar. Isn't that what it is about those statues on Easter Island? Isn't it that they are already in us? Isn't it that archetypal thing? And so this crazy thing happened when I was in the middle of writing the Libra reading. And Logos and Maki Maki are up there in the top five most challenging points I've ever tried to delineate. Sometimes just like it's easy, and some, maybe it's just my headspace, and sometimes it's like, God damn, I'm just keep chasing this thing in circles. So I'm in the middle of the Liber reading, and I get my camera and decide I'm going to just randomly go somewhere. So one of the ways I do that is I just start making turns on country roads that I'm not familiar with. I basically get lost. And since it's a lot of back roads, it's easy to get lost. So I'm driving around. I think I took Sawkill Road and maybe turned off of Sawkill Road, or I'm in the back country of nowhere in Ulster County, and park the car, you know, just get it off the road, out of the way, and start walking. And there was a building in the distance, you know, not that far in the distance, maybe, you know, 500-600 feet away. And I start walking toward it. Now I'm in the middle of the Liber reading when I'm writing about Maki Maki. I'm trying to crack Maki Maki. I'm trying to make sense of this deity that's associated with the Easter Islands, but it's not the religious cult that made the Moai, those statues. It's the next one that knocked them down. So I'm walking around. I'm like, let's go walk toward that thing. And it's this kind of, I don't know what it is, but kind of an industrial thing. This stuff made there. And I walk up to the building, and there are all these statues of the Moai in the middle of fucking nowhere, Ulster County, totally randomly, as random as I parked my car anywhere, just ditched on the side of the road, take a walk toward a random building, and I'm staring at the Moai. These original ancestors of Easter Island. So somehow that cult, that those people are not the current, that's not their thing now, the Moai. The new group, which has the god Maki Maki, knocked them all down. And that is, we get into this old god versus new god situation. And the old people, the original who built the Moai, seem to be very driven by a profound, powerful connection to the ancestors. And then this new cult comes along, it knocks over all that stuff, and the big religious ritual is something where they have to, the strongest men in the community swim across the ocean to another island, and they've got to climb a cliff and get an egg off the cliff from a bird on this other nearby island, but still, you know, shark-infested, ice-cold waters, whatever, I don't know, whatever. It's the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And come back with an intact egg. First one that comes back with an intact egg wins. And they get to do nothing for a year. This, to me, seems almost comical. And it is a caution about getting too hopped up on the new gods. We live in the age of the new gods. They keep introducing us to new gods. Hello, it's now, meet ChatGPT and the new god, Sam Altman. Everyone bow down to Sam Altman and this new thing. And then suddenly they're all over the place. And then suddenly these tech giants, suddenly they too become deities. That can pay $1 million to sit in on a government ceremony. There is caution against A, the new gods, and B, anything that is gamified. You know, we don't want to be playing people's games. Pick your own games or play your own games, but you don't want to be getting involved in other people's games in any way against your will or in any kind of an unconscious fashion. Like, oh, okay, well, I'll play. Well, yeah, who wins and who loses? You can get eaten, right? This is the thing. You can drown playing this game. Ooh, let's go swim across the ocean and climb a cliff and get an egg and swim back. Yeah, you can come back without any arms and legs. So that's caution. And you might get a picture of the Moai. In fact, there is one right in that Liber reading, because I photographed all of these statues of the Moai. Then this guy, who's actually a carpenter, shows up. He He's like, what you doing? I'm like, why do you have those statues from Easter Island? And he just had them. They were like 4 feet tall. You can see them. They're right there. Okay, next point. Another weird point. We're talking weird shit, right? M87, Logos, Maki Maki. Yeah, here's one more weird one. This one is called Zeus. Now, this is very important. Zeus is a hypothetical. It represents a potential. It's one of the Witte points, Hamburg School of Astrology, Uranian School, Trans-Neptunian Point. They're all the same thing. There's eight of them. And there's a lot of energy coming in from the outside. You are in possession of a lot of energy. I don't care how many Saturns and Neptunes and Chirons and Erises and Stellatios you can pack into your seventh house. It's still a lot less than a trillion stars in the same place. So they can all go piss off. You also have this thing called Zeus, and Zeus is exactly opposite the Chiron-Eris conjunction. So you've got this thing that seems to be coming in from the outside, the Chiron-Eris conjunction that's exact on Feb 19th or something like this. No, sorry. That's Saturn and Neptune. I'm getting a little tired here. Saturn-Neptune. So the more assertive one of those, the one that the conjunction that is like, wow, what is that? What is this mass awakening going on? Who is this person who is suddenly so different? What is this situation that I'm looking at? Right? There's a lot to relate to in your seventh house. But the hot spot in your seventh in Aries, opposite sign, workaday world of relationships, walk around environment, Chiron conjunct Eris, big, high focus, high power. But that has an immediate counterpoint in Libra. Most people don't look at these trans-Neptunian points. It's ridiculous to have a planet without a body. It's like the stupidest thing in the world. The only thing with that is I've been looking at them since the beginning, when I too was like, well, what are these? But I at least came at it with an open mind, and I realized, they definitely are talking about something going on. And what this something is, Zeus is the ability to direct energy. So direct means to direct, to point the laser beam, and direct also means to deflect. It is generally, I think, strategic. Zeus, I would add the word strategic to Zeus is a key word. Now let's look at let's just get a quick look at the trans-Neptunian points. I'm pretty sure I link this in inner peace. Controlled directed energy. Okay, so that's the function. That's the thing that you can do. It's like a martial arts kind of thing. Then machines, creativity, leadership, all things military, there's a strategy concept. Combustion engines, compulsion, drive. Arlene writes, Zeus is like a loaded gun that she says that is aimed. I would say that must be aimed. It signifies well-planned efforts. And by the way, it takes 455 years to orbit. Well-planned. Which means that whatever is coming in from the outside, the more intense, the better. You have the ability to respond to it in a strategic way. You just have to stop and use your brilliant Libra mind and consider the various possibilities, but also respond intuitively in the moment. It's very important to respond intuitively in the moment, right? There's only so much that you can plan, but know that you have the capacity, the ability, the skill, the talent, the innate ability, something to be able to handle whatever you see, feel, and experience. Back in a bit. Interstellar. I've left linked that. That's from a 10-hour yellow noise recording. It's really, try leaving it on. It's really quite amazing. In a way, very reassuring, and I find grounding. Let's talk about a couple of other houses. Let's consider the 10th and the 11th that are joined. One's Cancer, one's Leo, and they're joined by the movement of Jupiter. Now, the 10th is your career reputation house. One thing about Libra is that this can tend to cycle. Virgos usually have two careers. Libras have cyclical careers. It's because it's interesting. A lot of entertainers are Libras, a lot of rock stars are Libras. All musicians will tell you that they have cyclical careers. All entertainers will tell you that they're in work and out of work, and in work and out of work. And you have that kind of feeling with Cancer up on the 10th place. Now, Jupiter's been there now for about 6-7 months, and Jupiter has it's provided you with a sense of potential and a sense of stabilization. And I would say that even if you think you haven't really accomplished much in the past 6 months to a year, you actually have accomplished quite a bit. You just may not be aware of it yet. It may not be up to your highest standards or whatever, but it's definitely you have an impressive resume from the past year. I suggest you go back and contemplate all the things you have accomplished that are not just necessarily directly like getting an Emmy award or a book contract, but that are meaningful developments. Ways you've become known, ways you have solidified your reputation. Your reputation is your asset of highest value. Remember that. And Jupiter is all over this right now. So you will thrive on understanding the extent and the degree to which everything is based on your reputation. All of your success is based on your reputation. And it is a very human thing. That's the beauty of it. You don't need to present yourself as any kind of like the extra executive. You can present yourself just as a person. Even in the very corridors of power, such as they may exist, you just kind of show up, feeling comfortable and ready to work, and you've got it going on. So Jupiter in Cancer for about 5 more months till June 30th. Take advantage of this. Jupiter stations direct on March the 10th. So that's a point of action. There's going to be more happening. There's like, for example, for the 3 weeks leading up to March 10th when Jupiter stations direct, there's going to be a lot happening, you're going to see happening in the world, but you don't need to act directly on it. You don't need to. You can bide your time. And by bide your time, I'm talking about a month or two to make the move that you want to make sometime after March 10th in terms of major professional decisions that you make. Then Jupiter sails right through. It's going to make a conjunction to Cronus, going to make a conjunction to Hades, and then it's going to go into your 11th place, which is also a very reputational house, even more so than Cancer. And this is the folk hero kind of reputational. It's not the Emmy award type of reputational. It's the folk hero, basically. The Leo on the 11th house is someone who society looks up to, and get it. Society looks up to you. The people around you look up to you. They respect you for who you are. And Jupiter's going to go there. And one of the first things Jupiter's going to do is it's going to meet up with one of these crazy eight Wittig points, Hamburg school, Uranian astrology, trans-Neptunian points, called Vulcanus, a lot of reputational power. So you if you work steadily and don't go for the quick hit, but you go for the building the foundation and then building on the foundation, you're likely to find that you are much more prominently in the public eye, and it's not because of some corporate promotion. It's owing to a form of popularity. And look for this in the second half of the year. This starts to activate when Jupiter goes into Leo on June 30th. And then by like around July 26th, there's a massive alignment. So I would suggest that you do not want to overcommit to anything before late July. Committing is one thing. Involvement is one thing. Having any agreement you make prior to August 1st being a commitment you make with flexibility, that you understand that the task itself may require flexibility, the contractual arrangements may require flexibility, and that's because something bigger is likely to be coming. And I know that August seems like a long way off, or July, we're talking 5 months. Now I'm looking outside, it's 8 degrees outside. When August comes, it's going to probably be 95 in the same exact place, and I'm going to have water out for the birds. But you have plenty to do between now and then, first of all. So it's not like you can do nothing between now and late July. There's so much happening. But what I'm saying is, don't overcommit. Overcommitting means either you're doing too much, or you can't get out, or you can't adapt, you can't adjust. So you want to make your conditions adjustable, the conditions of your contracts adjustable. And Jupiter, which rules Cancer because it's exalted in Cancer, so it's a delegate of your 10th, of your power, of your presentation in the world, of your reputation in the world, suddenly, around July 26th or something, connects to everything else in the chart. It's crazy. Jupiter opposes Pluto exactly and connects to Uranus and to Neptune and to trans Pluto in your 12th house, which is going to open your sense of your own possibility, with Apollon in Scorpio, another one of those hypothetical points, and then the family Hunger Games group in Capricorn and others. So there's suddenly this whole other constellation that emerges. People are going to write about it as like the grand sextile. You're going to see some articles about it, and someone's likely to give it a name and, you know, capitalize on it, the harmonic concordance or whatever. For you, this is this point where everything fits together. So conserve your resources, conserve your time, use things besides money when you can. You can have a very frugal sense if you need it. You can be a spendthrift too, but you can have, you know, bring frugality, ask people to work for you for a little less rather than a little more, work out arrangements with people, and remember that you're relying on your reputation, which is a very good reputation, and you are seen as someone who is helpful, like the neighborhood mom who always has cookies ready for the kids, and who is got the box of Band-Aids and it's like the cool mom, basically cool mom in a neighborhood. Rely on that. You don't have to stress or stretch it. It's just a fact of the way that you're treated. You're treated. People see you as a person with dignity and an innate, inherent dignity. It's not really patriarchal. It's really a matriarchal dignity. Even if you're a man, it's going to be a kind of a matriarchal dignity. How would that look? I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm speaking as someone who's 49% female. The alertness to all of the children, the weaker creatures, Those who are still coming up in the world, it's not about the soldiers who are already trained. It's about the young ones who don't know quite what they want. And, making sure that confused people are reassured and that when the kids come in from playing out in the snow, that there's hot cocoa made. This is very important. This kind of taking care of the neighborhood is primo importance for you. Okay, then this moves into another stage of taking care of the neighborhood, but then suddenly it seems to be so much bigger. It's more like local hero mode with Jupiter conjunct Vulcanus opposite Pluto. It's freaking crazy. With all the outer planets in the mix, with Pluto, Neptune, and Uranus in Gemini all in an aspect pattern, this is freaking nuts. This is a lot of energy for you. So stay organized. Stay fed. Stay well rested. Keep your desk as clear as you can keep it, and stay in the creative flow. You kind of can't go wrong if you're paying attention to what's going on around you. Okay, so that's 10 and that's 10 and 11, Cancer and Leo. All right, let's take up another pair, 8 and 9. It is a very interesting pairing. You have Taurus on the 8th house. The 8th house is about commitments, which you prefer to be steady. You prefer to be solid in your commitments and have people be solid with you. And the 8th is also about the wealth that you attract from others. Taurus, that's a very good sign to have there. But what's been going on for the past 7 years is that Uranus has been going through there, and you may have thought there's been some kind of a real weird, bizarre instability spell that's captured you. The duration of Uranus across Taurus takes us back to the pre-COVID days of a whole different world, the before times. It's not even a joke. It's a cute way to say things. I forget what book that's from. But the before times. In the before times, you had more stability than you think you've had over the past 7 years of Uranus going through Taurus, which is supposed to be a very stable place where you can count on others. But what stability was replaced by was things happening spontaneously that were really good things that happened spontaneously. Yeah, there were things that shakeups and things that were like, what's going on here? And this is, and who's really good for their commitments? Like, anybody raise your hand if you believe that there's a sacred honor involved in making a commitment. Right? This is all about you, that there is a sacred honor in commitments. But with Uranus going through there, it's like, gee, am I the only one? But no, you're not. You're actually not the only one, and you did figure that out. So now two things are happening. Uranus, this disruptive element and inventive element, is leaving Taurus and entering Gemini, your fellow air sign, which is a sign that angle, that Gemini ninth house angle, describes your spiritual theory, which is a human theory. Several key signs have a human theory of spirituality. The whole spiritual thing has gone, in my opinion, in my absolutely not too humble opinion, has gone way fucking over corporate. Do we really need to sit on Sunday to pray and meditate in a building that's part of a multi-billion-dollar international corporation? Really? I don't think so. You don't need to be in some branch of the Anglican or the Catholic Church to find God. You do not need to be in McDonald's to find food. And in fact, you just think folks are fine. Like, that's great. Folks, human beings. So as long as you are around other human beings, and this can even be in one-on-one friendships or kind of fellow traveler type of relationships, as long as you're grounded in immediate social relationships, you feel spiritually stable. Now, Uranus is coming, and Uranus is going to shake that up. First of all, it's going to likely bring a little bit of a multitude. It's going to multiply the usual two or four type of thing into a larger group. But there's another thing going on with this, and that is that what we in our time call spiritual is actually the mental state of the community, of society, of the environment. And that includes of the very, very, very wide and comprehensible digital environment, which tends to dominate the mental state. So this conflation of mental with spiritual, which may not be a conflation at all, right? It's like, well, if we don't worry about those, you know, those 2 foot thick books that are kept in the Vatican Library, and some chump wrote in Latin in the year 506 AD, and some other chump rewrote it and changed everything, and then that's the truth about God is written way back in that dusty old book. Nah, that's not true. That's not how it works. But there is. Let's say a prevailing spiritual state of consciousness on the planet that you got an antenna pointed right at, called Sedna, now in Gemini, and that in that paradigm, the mental state is the spiritual state. Someone is mentally agitated or angry, that's their spiritual state. Someone is balanced, that's their spiritual state. Someone is curious, that's their spiritual state. They're antisocial, that's their spiritual condition. They are social, that's their spiritual condition. So in many ways, spiritual is this like fourth degree abstraction. And all you really have to be looking at is, are the kids happy? You're one of them. Are the kids happy? And suddenly it's going to be more. Now, Uranus in the ninth, pick somewhere weird and go there. Pick somewhere you haven't ever been, probably a couple of places, and go there. Pick something interesting. You don't need to travel a lot. You want to be ready to travel somewhat spontaneously. And for you... One interesting thing about Libra is people, you know, they need to go to Europe or they need to go to Asia. You know, you get a phone call, I'm in the Forbidden City and wherever. Yeah, sure. For you, you can drive for 3 hours and then like have the kinds of experiences that people have when they go someplace really exotic. And remember that for you, travel is about the people that you meet. It's not about seeing things or, touching the ancient Wally Blow stone of Dublin or some bullshit like that. It's all about the people that you meet in the places that you go. It's all about the social experiences that you have when you're traveling. So therefore, go friendly places. Go places where you're drawn to people based on the social dimension of the place rather than the historic dimension of the place. And often they come together. I mean, Mykonos, Delos, that's incredible. Mykonos, fantastic place to socialize. Delos, 1 mile away, the largest archaeological site in all of Europe on this island called Delos off of Mykonos, right? It's crazy. So there often is that thing. You want to be where you speak people somewhat, speak the language, you know, not you mean. There's places where there's a little more English spoken than there's not. And it's very enriching of your actual real-life education. The last thing happening is Chiron is entering Taurus. And this is going to help anchor your relationships. It's going to help anchor your relationships on the physical plane. It's going to help anchor your relationships in a commitment to mutually held values. This is where nearly all relationships succeed or fail, is on the level of mutually held values. And that's what Chiron and Taurus is going to help you do. The warm up is in the spring. Then next spring, the Chiron goes into Taurus to stay, and that's a whole other story. But think in terms of relationships with mutually held values are the ones that work the best, including friendships. All right, that is my message for you, Libra. Thank you for joining me. Signing off from the Harshaw House at 3:54 p.m. on Saturday. Lots of love. And bye for now.